Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today, I'm talking with Areina Salinas-Jasso, who is a member of the Knowledge Technologies Group at Microsoft Research. You've got a master's degree in computer science from the University of Texas. How are you?
Good. How are you, Scott?
I'm great. Thanks for coming on. You're also a podcaster, and you've done a lot of different shows.
Yes, that's correct. I host the Women in Tech Show, which is a weekly podcast.
And you've been guests on like Software Engineering Daily and stuff like that. And people can check out the womenintechshow.com. Great URL.
Thank you. Did you want to know a bit about the show? Or?
Yeah. I assume it's about women in tech.
Yeah. So as a software engineer, when I come to work every day, I still see that there are not enough women working in technology. However, there are a few women who are working on fantastic projects and defining the future of technology. And what I have found is that these women often get invited to give the diversity talk at conferences to the extent that on their website they specify that they do talks, but to not ask them to give the diversity talk. So the goal of the Women in Tech Show is to provide a platform where they talk about technology and the products that they are building instead of the women in tech concept and what it feels like to be a woman in tech.
I see. So people are getting, you know, like people like me might be calling the women that they know in tech and say, oh yeah, come and talk about diversity in technology. And it's like, well, no, I want to talk about cool stuff I'm building because it's cool.
Exactly. That's what's happening. And the diversity talk, I'm not against that talk, but I think we've been overdoing it a bit. And my thought is that if we have more women talking about technology, more people are going to learn from them. And it's not going to be a rare thing to see a woman talking about tech. So it'll help.
That's great.
Yeah. So this will help tackle the unconscious bias problems and things like that.
Yeah. Well, I hope that we're doing a small, I'm doing a small part as well. We've had a lot of different women and people of color on the show because they are doing cool stuff, not because we're trying to fill some kind of quota. I don't want to create a world of what I call Power Rangers diversity. Have you ever seen the Power Rangers team?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. So with the Power Rangers, whenever they build a team, there's one of each, and you can't have two of one kind because, you know, it wouldn't be the Power Rangers if it didn't look like a weird pie chart of diversity. Mm-hmm. So instead we want them doing cool stuff and talking about cool stuff. So what cool stuff are you working on? Because you've changed your career a little bit from one technology to another.
Yeah. So I joined Microsoft full time. It was my first full time job back in June 2014. Mm-hmm. And for 2 years, I was working on web applications and services. And when I went to Velocity last year, which is a conference about web performance and DevOps, there was this talk that really caught my attention from Patrick Meenan, who is the creator of the web page test and works on Chrome and DevTools, and Tammy Everts, our research at SOSTA. And their talk was using machine learning to predict bounce rate and conversions. So what I liked about this talk is that Patrick Meenan was saying, I don't have a background in machine learning. I don't have a PhD in AI, but the tools are very accessible now with this library from Python called scikit-learn. So he was showing the code and he said, here it is. 8 lines of Python and we're running a machine learning algorithm. So at that moment, it clicked to me that this is going to be very big and it's the next revolution in technology.
Did this make you want to just pivot your career and change direction right away? That was the moment?
It made me think, certainly. And then right after that, Microsoft announced their big investment in artificial intelligence and bringing AI into our products. And there's even an AI school now. So that's when I started thinking it's right now when it's happening. The tools are very accessible. There are lots of resources online to learn this topic. That's when I decided to focus on this because it's the next wave of technology and the impact that it's going to have in our lives is going to be so big.
Mm-hmm. And you were doing web dev at Microsoft at that point when you decided to switch?
Yes, yes. So I was working on previously Power Apps in the web portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was services in C# and the front end, TypeScript, HTML, Knockout. And before that, I was working on an internal project, which was Angular 1.0 and similar stack, TypeScript, C#. So what I had switched from was from working on an internal project to a consumer-facing project because I wanted to experience that side of a product. And it's very different because the first one goes from being 100 users or 200 and the other one to thousands and then seeing that growth.
When I think of Microsoft Research, I think of people with advanced degrees and PhDs. And I have to say, and this is my own internal kind of bias, because I went to a community college, which is like a technical school. Mm-hmm. I don't have an advanced degree. I have a bachelor's degree. I feel intimidated because I think everyone is doctor this and doctor that. Now, you have a master's degree, which is an advanced degree. Are you working on your PhD? And how do you feel? Is everyone on the team a PhD type person?
I'm not working on a PhD. I did do a master's in computer science. My team is very mixed. There are several PhD people that have been on the industry 15 or 20 years. One of them studied linguistics and he's from Germany and built the autocorrect, not the autocorrect, the language checks in Word. Mm. So he built that. And then there's another PhD who focused on NLP. But what I'm seeing now after Microsoft's decision to democratize AI throughout the company is that we're bringing highly experienced software engineers and developers who can help integrate research technologies into products while also getting exposed to things like machine learning and deep learning, because these are now so accessible. Even several people say, you don't need a PhD. Sam Altman had a Q&A and he said, no, you don't need a PhD to do this. You just need to be motivated and start getting exposed to it. We have a lot of tools right now, like Kaggle, which makes a diverse set of data sets available that you can play with.
Can you spell that tool?
So Kaggle is Kaggle.
Ah, okay. And this is Kaggle.com. There's a whole website around it. It's a whole world of data science.
Yes. And we see people contributing there that have no backgrounds in PhDs and in AI and things like that. Mm-hmm. Because you can divide it in two areas. For example, one is creating those algorithms and optimizing them. And the other area is using those algorithms and tweaking some things like the parameters to solve problems like detecting cancer in X-ray images and things like that.
Interesting. So when I think of kind of the multiple layers, there's artificial intelligence in the general sense. There's machine learning as we get more specifically in what we think of as machine learning right now. And then there's this concept of deep learning.
Mm-hmm.
For many of us, myself, I'll speak for myself. It's a black box, like you're describing. You know, I can write a couple of lines of Python. I put it into a black box And then from my perspective, a miracle happens. Mm-hmm. And someone with a PhD understands that. Should I strive to understand the internals, or how deep does one need to go? How deep do you have to go before you say, all right, and then a miracle happens? Like, how many layers of abstraction down do you go?
So the first layer that I think of as the big umbrella is artificial intelligence, which is making machines intelligent. And under this umbrella, we have the machine learning umbrella, which is a way of teaching machines to do intelligent tasks like recognizing images, processing natural language. And then inside machine learning, we have deep learning, which is using several layers of neural networks. It's just a different, yet another type of teaching machines intelligent tasks, but without having to have expertise on defining features. So for example, in machine learning, mm-hmm. if you're trying to solve a problem like detecting spam, if I'm right. doing it the machine learning way, I specify features, which are characteristics that will help me know if something is spam. For example, if it contains a certain word like free food or something, or
no, free money, right? PayPal free money. Me.
So a person is specifying those characteristics. While in deep learning, why it's become very big and accessible is that those features are automatically detected by an algorithm. So to answer your question, how deep do you need to go? You don't need to go really deep as to understanding the mathematics in the models, but you need to have some depth as to what the algorithm is doing and some implications, like do they perform well with more data? Mm. So I think there's a middle ground. There's definitely a line between the PhD and more about applied machine learning.
I like that. That's a good point. And you know, that's interesting that you point that out, because you said applied machine learning, which seems like the thing I would be interested in. Mm-hmm. So let me see if I can parse this a little bit, and we'll come back to that. So machine learning, you said, is, you know, it's an approach mm-hmm. to go towards artificial intelligence. So you take algorithms, you parse data, you learn from it, and you train it. You train the system. Mm-hmm. While deep learning is a different algorithmic approach. Using neural networks where you can weigh input and then decide whether or not something is correct based on that weighing. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily need to understand the advanced math, but I do need to understand what's good. Like if I decide to do a face tracking system, I shouldn't just blindly throw faces at an API somewhere and hope it works out. I should do a little research and understand am I using an appropriate tool for the job?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this is always open. If you have more questions about why a certain function is working, you can always decide to read about it in more detail, mm-hmm. about the math if you're interested in it. But for applied machine learning, to solve interesting problems, you don't need to go really deep.
Okay.
There's this really helpful website called fast.ai, and they're actually offering a free 7-lesson course on deep learning. And this is done by Jeremy Howard and Rachel Thomas. Jeremy is one of the top contributors at Kaggle. And I think he was a head data scientist there. And their philosophy is to make deep learning uncool again. By this, they mean that a lot of people and experts, like you said, there are a lot of buzzwords, and they make you think you need thousands of GPUs and millions of data, when in reality, mm-hmm. that is not true. So this opens the door to people in developing countries to consider using these tools to solve problems in their communities. Because what Jeremy and Rachel say is, the people in Silicon Valley, they're not going to be thinking about some village in a third world country to solve their problem they're using AI. So that's why everybody should start getting exposed to this, because it's a very powerful tool.
Mm, wow. Yeah. So fast.ai, it's a 7-week course, and part one, practical deep learning for coders, is really great. I like the way that they said this, because this is literally talking to me here. It says, learn how to build models without needing graduate level math.
Yes.
But without dumbing anything down. Mm-hmm. And it's free. You can actually go to fast.ai, go to course.fast.ai and check that out. What a great resource. Thank you.
Yes, it's a great resource. It's one of the best ones that I've found.
Okay. So then you found yourself in Microsoft Research, and you found that balance between, you know, the internals of AI and then what you called applied machine learning, which is you understand enough and then you can start applying it practically. And what I liked about that word applied, when I think about it in my own experience, is I have a degree in software engineering. And you have a degree in computer science. Have you ever thought about the difference between those two practices as being distinct?
Yes, definitely. Computer science can be more theoretical, more about the math and proving theorems, especially in areas like cryptography and theory of computation, while software engineering is about building high quality software that's maintainable, understandable, extendable. And it's a really important set of skills to have, software engineering, certainly.
Yeah, I've been talking with a number of people about how young people learn, about how new software people learn. And Maria on my team and I both feel that in some instances, and this is a general statement, so not trying to pick on anyone who has a particular degree, but in some instances, people can come out of school with a computer science degree, but not understand how to write software.
Exactly.
Well, you know, and that can be a real problem. We can be setting people up for failure.
I totally agree with that. And if you're coming from a traditional university background, for example, I did a study abroad in UT Austin, and also my undergrad is from Mexico. There are topic courses which allow you to choose from several options, and they have some software engineering courses. But when I was studying, at least, they're not mandatory, so you get to choose them. But in these courses, I learned using Git, pair programming, test-driven development. So there are certainly ways to learn software engineering principles while you're at school, but sometimes you have to choose them for yourself. And another thing that you can do is do an internship before coming full-time, because it's a good 12-week program where you can learn these principles before you graduate.
Yeah, it's difficult if you find yourself with a deep understanding of the internals of computers. But most, in my experience, most people, when they do their work in college, it's not always in groups. So computers is as much about how they work as it is about how to work with other humans. And if you take someone who's done 6 years of deep research alone in the library and then drop them on a diverse team of 15 people from all over the world, it can be an overwhelming experience to learn how to actually ship. Yeah.
And this is why I think we're seeing an interesting balance at Microsoft Research, where more experienced software engineers and developers are collaborating with researchers, because there's an exchange of knowledge happening. Researchers are learning about programming practices, and the software engineers are learning about the research side of things, like artificial intelligence and things like that.
Interesting. So when I think of Microsoft Research, though, I assume that you're all off making deep thoughts, right? But you had said something about the democratization of AI. Is there a change in Microsoft Research that has you shipping on a regular basis?
Yes. So Satya recently announced this Democratize AI initiative. What he means by this is, let's take some of the research that has been produced at Microsoft Research and embedded in our products where it makes sense, obviously. So for example, my team successfully added machine learning models to Outlook and Dynamics. And one example of where we see artificial intelligence is if you receive a message, we can detect, oh, is this a meeting request? Or for example, in the Dynamics CRM, you can have intelligence in, will this lead me to a sale or not? And based on this, you can prioritize which customers to focus on if you want. So this is the whole democratized AI push. It's about not merging two organizations, but certainly have a better collaboration to build more intelligent tools that can enhance productivity.
Does that make you feel like you have to find a balance between the pressure of shipping something and the time required to really deeply think about something and research something?
Yes, there's definitely a balance there that needs to be taken into account.
I would feel a little overwhelmed. I would feel like, wait a second, I thought I was supposed to go off and think deeply and research this, and now you're making me ship.
Mm-hmm. There's actually a balance there because, like I mentioned, is finding research that has been produced and just see if it's useful in a product. So there's certainly still a focus in doing research without the pressure of shipping something. Mm-hmm. So there are the different sides still.
And this hasn't been a problem for you in your career? You found it to be a flexible enough arrangement?
Yes. I found it to be flexible enough. And what I like right now is that a lot of teams are starting to use deep learning. So right now what I'm doing is I'm learning about this technology and then trying it out before building something. So I have a balance time to do both things.
Knowledge Technologies Group is the group that you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
And is this one of many AI groups within Microsoft Research? Are there like a whole splinter groups of different AIs?
Yes, there's a group for machine translation, which is the people that worked on the translator app. And this app allows you to speak to the phone. And there's another person that gets the translation of what you're saying. So you can be speaking in English and then I can see it on my phone in Spanish. So that's one team. There's also the machine teaching group, which is about making machine learning tools more accessible. So there are several groups, and you can find these groups and the research areas if you go to the Microsoft Research website. It's very neatly organized, the areas of focus that are available there.
Mm-hmm. Since you work close to that team, I'm as a person that is interested in languages but never happy with my own abilities with other languages, I'm curious if you've noticed a difference in the last 5 or 10 years around machine translation, because I think we've all had that experience where someone sent us something in a different language and we copy-pasted it into Bing Translate or Google Translate, and some native speaker could smell that it wasn't right. You know, they could understand it, but they go, that's not exactly how you would say it. Mm-hmm. Is it getting better? Have we been sitting at like 80% and now we're getting towards 100%? Because it seems like it's getting better, but at the same time, a native speaker can always smell translation.
Yes, I think that's correct. It's getting better, but we still need a little push on this area because there are things like slang and sarcasm that are still difficult to detect. But what I've been reading about is that when the approach was switched to deep learning, there are better results, but I haven't seen examples of these results yet. So I'll definitely take a look at that. But what I see from Google Translate, Bing Translate, is that it's good, but yes, I can detect it was not translated by a human.
One day we'll have the universal translator where we can Skype each speak our native language and then it'll come out nicely.
Yes, I hope so.
What about the, we talked about the different buzzwords, artificial intelligence, machine learning, and deep learning, and we kind of broken them down so that they aren't buzzwords anymore. But what about the term data science? It's just a giant field. It's a very vast field. If someone had data scientist on their resume, I wouldn't know what that meant.
Yes, when I think data scientist, I think a lot of visualizations, but maybe that's from the little exposure that I've had here at Microsoft. So it's more about visualizing the data, but I might be wrong, and about taking decisions based on this. So I think it's a little higher level than deep learning and machine learning, but I think there's some machine learning involved in data science, for example, clustering, I would say. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a little higher level.
Yeah, it seems very big. It seems like the big tent, because it's data-driven science. Mm-hmm. It's trying to take other giant worlds like statistics and mm-hmm. data analysis in a general term and saying, and then now you just wrap it all up. You wrap up all these different things. I'm a data scientist. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I assume you've got statistical learning, you've got data mining, you've got machine learning you can plug it into. Maybe it's just being a statistician, except it's more fun to say data scientist.
Yes, that could be. And since you brought up data science, what I'm thinking about now is an important concept in all this artificial intelligence, and why diversity is important is because we have these data sets mm-hmm. that are gathered, but sometimes they don't include diversity. And when I was at MTech a few weeks ago at this AI conference, there was a woman from the film industry saying, I'm a minority, I'm a black woman, so I'm a minority in the data set. Like, who's building these data sets? Because uh-huh. her concern was, this was just an example she brought up. I don't know if this is how it works, but she's saying, uh-huh. in LinkedIn, if my data sets say that white men get a job in tech, what is the recommendation system going to be? Always, you're going to recommend white men for those positions. So she had a concern about this. So a lot of work needs to be done to think about the data sets. And another example we've seen is Snapchat wasn't recognizing some people in their filters. Mm-hmm. So this is also why we should have more diverse teams working in AI, because it's going to be a pretty big area, and we uh-huh. need people with diverse backgrounds to raise these questions and prove that the algorithms don't work for certain minorities.
Yeah, this is a really important thing. I think that from a scientific perspective, this is important. And the word that I like to use, diversity is a great word, but I really like the word inclusive. Mm-hmm. If you include everybody, then much better things are going to happen. And we see this as users. If you go and Google, like, you know, white teenager on Google, and then look at the images, you'll see one thing. And if you Google black teenager, you might see another thing. Yeah. And, you might want to understand, well, why are those images being chosen? Well, they're being chosen because of the way that the weighing system of the artificial intelligence that powers Google, right? Mm-hmm. And your point about having the correct data set, remember when the Kinect came out very, very early on, mm-hmm. On the Xbox, it couldn't see my black wife, and she was very frustrated that she couldn't be seen by the Kinect. And then a couple of firmware updates and some beta testing later, when they went and had all different people from the whole, different skin tones, get looked at, then suddenly she could be seen by Kinect and felt much happier about it. But you can catch those things early, I'm hearing yes. you say, with a team that's inclusive.
Yes, because if a team that's inclusive is working on this, they'll all have tried it out and figured out, oh, it doesn't work for me. Why?
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. That's a really important thing to know. Mm-hmm. So people should check out, I'm hearing you say, the fast.ai, which is the free course. Mm-hmm. And that's actually by the individual, one of the individuals in that team, was number two on the Kaggle contest, Jeremy Howard, and then Rachel Thomas has a PhD from Duke, and she is involved as on Fast AI in those courses as well, and that's all free.
Yes, and if you want to start learning machine learning, the one that I highly recommend is Intro to Machine Learning from Udacity, because it's very hands-on throughout the course, and the lectures are very short. They're 2-minute videos, and then you get to type a code snippet in Python. Plus, you get to use the Enron dataset. So it's very hands-on, and it's a really good intro to this area for those that are coming from a software engineering background.
Very cool. And then people can check out your podcast at thewomenintechshow.com and subscribe on iTunes.
Yes, that's correct.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you for having me, Scott. It was great talking to you.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.